This conference call is now being recorded.
So, hello everyone. My name's Jonathan Robinson. I'm the chair of the GNSO Council, elected as of the annual meeting in Toronto. And I've wanted to put this call together to really create a 1 hour brief opportunity to provide an introduction to the council, and particularly an opportunity for new councillors to get an introduction to the council, to myself, and to one another. And that was really my purpose. I think there's a prospect of us leaping straight into regular council meetings without necessarily doing the background work in making sure everyone is up to speed, feels welcome, and has the opportunity to ask any questions or you know, get up to speed with their role on the council. So that was really my thinking in doing this. It may be a one-off, or it may be one of a series if we find we have a need for more than this, and either to repeat the same thing for people who weren't able to make it, or to move on to other areas. But really, it was and there is a risk that I will cover things that for some of you may well be very familiar territory, and for others you may not have heard before. So please bear with me if I do discuss things that you are very familiar with. But my objective really, as I say, was to provide a welcome and an initial information and other benchmark or common starting point, so that we could use that as a platform for further development, either of councillors and their experience and ability to participate, or more generally for the council's development. So if we could move to the next slide, please. Am I able to scroll the slides, or is it do I need to request that each time, just to check?
Jonathan Giesler here. If you'd like to just try yourself, otherwise I have the sync button ready to go. If you'd be so kind.
All right, I will try and scroll through, and if I have problems, I will ask for you to move through. So I've really outlined the objectives, say, welcome and setting an initial benchmark. I can move the slides. Thank you. So I'll do that as necessary. And the topics I wanted to cover were the GNSO Council itself and its position within the GNSO, the work of the council, the role of the councillors themselves, and then to touch on the first meeting we're going to have. So moving on then to the GNSO Council itself, and as I say, I apologise if this is very familiar territory to some of you, but let's just set the scene here. The GNSO itself. And some people feel very strongly that we need to be very clear about the distinction, and rightly so, between the GNSO and the GNSO Council. And so one of the key things I wanted to establish was that there is the GNSO, which is broadly the policy development body responsible for developing policies relating to GTLDs, generic top-level domains. But the GNSO then itself comprises a number of different groups, and there's of course the constituencies, which may be organised into stakeholder groups. There's the four stakeholder groups within the houses of the GNSO. There's the four stakeholder groups organised into houses. There's the two houses within the GNSO Council, and then there's the GNSO Council itself, which is responsible for managing the policy development process of the GNSO. One of the interesting things is that the work of the council doesn't necessarily originate either from within or outside the council. It can come from a number of different places, and we'll touch on that a little more as we go through. A key process for the work of the council is, of course, the policy development process, and that defines, in many ways, the substantial work of the council. What's perhaps not as widely or clearly known is that the policy work needn't necessarily result in what is known as consensus policy. Consensus policy is an absolutely critical point in all of this, and that's because consensus policy is is the policy that is ultimately binding on the contracted parties and forms part of their contract with ICANN. And so to the extent that policy work within the GNSO gives rise to consensus policy, it has a very particular and specific implication. And what you will find sometimes is a reference to a picket fence which defines the boundary between consensus policy or not in the contracts that the contracted parties have with ICANN. By the way, I don't want this to be a complete monologue. I'd like to talk through the slides, but I am more than happy, especially given the relatively small audience, for anyone to put up their hand on staff to correct me if I've got something wrong and from or needs clarification, and from other participants, councillors, if there is something you would like to ask. So feel free to contribute either through questions or additional information. As you well know, the council is well structured in a variety of ways, both in terms of the way in which it's organised and all of the processes. Has that someone else just joined?
This is Thomas. Hello, everybody. Sorry for being late.
Hi, Thomas. Welcome. I won't repeat what I've said before. It's Jonathan, but really we're just walking through a couple of areas as a form of both welcome and ground, setting a benchmark for new councillors and anyone else who joins, so we have a common basis from which we work going forward. Mm-hmm. I'm talking a little about the GNSO Council in this particular slide, and the structure and the way in which it's organised into the houses, the number of members, which frankly is relatively large. I mean, I was talking to someone outside of the council and outside of ICANN of how this, you know, what the council is and how it works, and they were amazed that we could operate functionally. And I think that's one of our key challenges, is to operate functionally and effectively with this size of membership, 23 members on the council, and to get through the business we do. So, you know, it's very easy to pick holes in how we work or whether we succeed as well as we might. But we, you know, by virtue of the multinational, multicultural and multi-stakeholder way in which we work, that we set ourselves up with some challenges. And so we should, to the extent that we do achieve things, we should be pleased and proud of what we do. There are clearly some of the topics we work with need to be voted on for getting them through the various gating stages of the process, of the processes. And the default of those voting thresholds is a simple majority of both houses. But there may be different thresholds depending on the particular area of work. And all of this is governed by the documented processes that some or all of you may be familiar with, or at least familiar with their existence. It is illuminating to read them, even if it seems like some hard work. And those are, you know, the ICANN bylaws, which then give rise to the existence of the GNSO and the GNSO policy development process, and of course the GNSO operating procedures. So all of this hangs together and is supported by, there are 11 ICANN policy staff who have varying roles and relationships with the council, and I won't single anyone out, but there are they provide a very important link into the work we do with ICANN, with the broader community, and in providing the support and hard work that makes the council effective. So let's go on to talk a little bit more then about the work of the council itself. As I said, we are responsible for managing the policy development process, and that involves managing and overseeing the key policy work, much of which is done within the PDP structure. Now, I talked about how a PDP might be kicked off, introduced, or developed, and really there are three, as far as I understand it, bases on which a PDP might commence. And when we say a PDP, I mean the PDP process, because it's a multi-stage process. It isn't simply the development of a single report. There are some particularly good process slides that illustrate this well on the GNSO website, and you'll see a little further down on this slide, I'll provide a link to the resources, and I'd encourage any counsellor, new or old, recent or current to or existing prior to Toronto, to be as familiar as possible with that website. It's a relatively new development, at least in its current incarnation, and provides real value to the council and councillors. So there can be an instruction from the board, or a motion from within the council itself, or a motion from an advisory committee, which will kick off the policy development process. And any councillor is free to prepare, and with staff support if necessary, an appropriate motion for consideration by the council. So it's something where, whilst it might seem somewhat intimidating to prepare a motion in the first instance, I certainly thought it were, I wouldn't have known where to start. You can get support from staff or the council leadership if this is something you're considering or think there is a basis on which we should be considering a particular area and for which a motion is required. I talked about just to touch on the council meetings, there is no prescribed frequency as far as I'm aware. Margie, I see your hands up. Let me.
This is Margie from staff. I just wanted to echo what Jonathan was saying. Anything you need help on, we've got various staff members that are assigned to each issue, and we're always happy to draft a motion, and provide guidance to any counselor on how to, how to move a project forward. So please don't feel intimidated in any way if you want to understand how to get work done, because that's what our staff is there for. What we do is we assign for every working group. We usually have one lead and one backup. And if you look at the pending project list that Jonathan has on the slide here, it shows all the projects and who the staff members are in supporting that. So just keep that in mind, that we're here to help, and we're always eager to jump in and do whatever we can.
Yeah, thanks, Margie. That's very helpful, and that's useful that you endorsed what I was saying there. And that's my experience. Those both web-based resources and human resources, if the staff will forgive me referring to them like that, are available to the council and to councillors in order to get the work done. And in some ways, we are very fortunate. We have a great deal of work to do, but we do have pretty high levels of support by some measures. I mean, when you talk to people about some of the early days of the council or its previous incarnations, it was less well supported, put it that way. Maybe the workload was lower, but it was certainly less well supported. As far as I'm aware, there is no prescribed frequency of meetings. We've run in recent times approximately every 4 weeks, and I will present to the council, if we haven't already, by email and then in our meeting, a proposed series of meetings that stretch out for the next approximately 12 months ahead, which I think you will hopefully find very useful in terms of longer-term planning and getting these in the diary, because it's pretty important to the effective functioning of the council. As I say, it's a challenge for the council to function, given where we are all over the world and participating remotely in any event. It's more challenging if people can't make meetings on a regular basis. So certainly by scheduling them well in advance, that should help. And of course, we have the three face-to-face meetings per annum at the ICANN, the scheduled ICANN meetings, which is, as we have to assume, it'll currently go on like that, although there is some talk of rethinking the way ICANN meetings may occur in future. So the cycle of activity is typically there's a motion deadline to produce motions before the meeting. and there's background work on the agenda and the content of the meeting, and then post-meeting it's reflected in the minutes. And we may try and put out some form of flash bulletin of key action items immediately after the meeting. So if people have taken on pieces of work or there's action items to be taken on, that's something which we'll look at doing. But in general, that's the way it's likely to work. I thought I'd mention in this slide very briefly the fact that there is the Standing Committee on Improvements in place as well, the SCI, as it's referred to, and as many of you will already be very familiar with, there are numerous acronyms floating around. But the Standing Committee on Improvements is there to look at council processes, and to the extent that there are council processes that need work on, the Standing Committee is in place to work on and develop those. Yes, Margie.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to go back to the council meeting issue. As Jonathan mentioned, it is very important to make the meetings, and particularly if you're, for example, if you've supported one of the motions, oftentimes, there's specific voting thresholds, and if you haven't, if you're not going to attend, there's proxy procedures for you to be able to allow your vote to essentially count. Somebody else would vote for you, but there's, it's very important to make the meetings, because there's actually been times where a motion may not pass simply because there weren't enough councilors in attendance that were in favor of it. And so that's just something that, with the calendar, being well in advance, if you can't make it, just, let Glenn know, and there's a proxy form that you would need to submit.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Of course, attendance is vital and highly desirable, but none of us can preempt the fact that we may not be able to attend in future. And as you say, Margie, it would be a great shame for a motion or to not be carried or to not go through based on the fact that the sort of bureaucratic procedure of sorting out a proxy wasn't filled in. So don't be, if you can't make it for any reason, personal or professional, at the very least, try and ensure that your presence is there through a proxy. That's a very good point. Lunray.
Yes, I just want to find out who can be the proxy for an NCA.
Brilliant question. I don't know is the short answer. Is anyone from staff able to help there?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Lunray's question was who is for a non-com appointee who could be normally the proxies are typically from within the stakeholder group, but a non-com appointee, who would be the proxy for a non-com appointee?
I actually don't know the answer to that. Marika, are you do you know that? I mean, I can certainly look at the rules. I'm sure the rules.
Margie, it's Glenn. Yes. I believe, and any other non-com appointee.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Because it has happened in the past, and the NOMCOM appointees have worked it out among themselves.
Well, that's a very interesting point, because clearly the NOMCOM appointee that then gives their proxy is either giving it to a NOMCOM appointee in the notionally assigned to the other house, or one that is a non-voting NOMCOM appointee. So Glenn, whilst I don't doubt you, I think that's such a technical point. It would be good to get that formally confirmed, actually. Would be great to hear.
I'll do that. I'll look up the rules, Jonathan.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. All right, so good question,
Lunray. It's in the operating procedures. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, I need to dig it out, but there was a case a year ago and one NCA at the time pointed out that there was a stipulation in the operating procedures. I can't quote that clause from the top of my head, but I'll dig it out.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it's just something it's a good question, and it's something I should be familiar with, and as should the non-com appointees in the event that they are unable to make the meeting. So that's helpful that you raised that. Thanks, Lunray. So moving on then to, I think, the next slide, which is really to talk about a little on the councillors and the role of the councillors. What's interesting here is that if you look at the bylaws, they require that the stakeholder groups should ensure their representation to the council is as diverse as possible, and even goes a step further. It's not just what might be assumed, for example, diversity of geography. The bylaws actually go into saying these should include considerations of geography, sector, ability, and gender. So by definition, we have diversity in various ways, and that provides us with, that was one of my motivations for trying to set a common benchmark in the first place of, if you like, just a standard in terms of education and an opportunity for councillors to start on as equal as possible a footing. So recognizing that, we need to be open to ensuring that we bring councillors up to speed. And as I say, this is in one sense the first step, or at least a concrete step in that process. I believe that and would expect that the stakeholder groups or constituencies would do some work in preparing their councillors prior to coming onto the council. But again, that preparation may not be uniform or standard, and so to try and assist with setting that to some form of common standard, or at least opening up the opportunity for those who feel not as well prepared as they'd like, or who just simply need some support, that's what the objective of creating this opening is. And that support might come from going back to the stakeholder group or constituency colleagues, from the secretariat, from myself in the chair, all the vice chairs. I mean, one thing that's quite interesting is, again, if you look into things, you'll see that the vice chairs, although they arise from specific houses and are put in place by specific houses, both the chair and the vice chairs have a duty to the council as a whole to, you know, operate and lead the council as a whole. So, you know, we are there as the council leadership, not and I think it's quite often assumed that that's really the chair, that this chair is the chair is overall. But in if you look at the rules, the vice chairs are also responsible for the council as a whole. And of course, I haven't included staff here, but we touched on staff earlier, save for the secretariat in that third bullet below new councillors. My personal thoughts are, and I'd welcome any input from others on the call, but you know, it is ideal to be as prepared as possible for the issues that come up. And personally, I find the volume of email at times, especially if you're on more than one list or multiple work groups or whatever the case is, can be quite intimidating. And someone once said to me that weeding a garden is best done little and often. And I think maybe that's the same with the email lists here, tracking those email lists and doing some pruning or work on them little and often is probably the right way, at least I find, in handling it. Many of you have got significant existing expertise in your stakeholder groups or constituencies that have been in leadership roles within those groups or on the council itself. So they are great to go back and rely on. And even for, I mean, I'm sure, I know Thomas would bear me out on this, and Lunray, that even for the non-com appointees, you'll find friendly and welcoming advice and input and a willingness to discuss issues outside, you know, in across the different constituencies. I think one of the things that I feel is very important is to understand and be clear on the positions you're bringing to the council, to the extent that you are a voting member, and in particular if you're responsible for voting on behalf of a constituency and stakeholder group. And as importantly as knowing the position you're representing is the rationale beneath it. And what I haven't put on the slide, I would very much like people to think about is, councillors to think about is, what scope they have for, you know, compromise. Because one of the potential criticisms of the council, I think, is that we can be quite uncompromising or siloed in our thinking. We stick within our groups and we stick to strongly held positions. Now, that may be that there is no little or no choice or perceived choice in that, but to the extent that there are, that you have the mandate to compromise a position, that's very helpful to know and be prepared to do that in dealing with some of the thornier issues. And then finally, I thought, you know, one of the ways, how does one get up to speed? And really, I think, like as with anything, getting up to speed with the issues, it may be helpfully done by picking one or two key areas of work, working in a working group or on a drafting team, and in particular, if it's related closely to an area which you may have pre-existing expertise on, and that's another way of getting up to speed and sort of running with the existing workload, which in my mind can be quite daunting at times. Let me pause there for a moment and just see if there's anything else anyone would like to add or any comments that anyone would like to add. Yes, Margie.
This is Margie. I think it's also useful for counselors to read the reports before the vote. I think there's I know it's a lot of work, but, you know, when it gets to the point of actually voting on the recommendations, it may clear up a lot of, questions about what the motion's all about. You'll sometimes see, for example, on the council list, a discussion of issues that were already addressed in the report itself because the counselors haven't read the report and realized, for example, that the working group may have already taken those issues into account. So, I know it's a lot of work. If you can't read the entire report, there's always an executive summary, at least, that provides, three pages of information to give you at least a high-level overview if you don't have the time to read the report itself. But that's something I think that, I'd like to see counselors be able to do before they vote on motions.
A very fair point, Margie. I imagine as a staff member who's put significant effort into, you and or your colleagues who put significant effort into these things, to see some of us as counsellors, and I'm sure I've been guilty of this in the past, raise questions that are clearly and well covered in the report, must be frustrating when there's potentially more substantive or other issues. And it's not to, and I know this is not your intent, to suppress in any way appropriate questions or issues of clarification or anything else, but nevertheless, doing the groundwork is absolutely vital. And so it's a point well made, and I appreciate that point. So moving then on to the meeting that's coming up, this is really basic, but we, of course, will rely on Adobe Connect and Dial-In exactly as we have now. Typically, we'll have a multi-part agenda made up of the three components, the consensus agenda, the motions, and the updates. And I've done a little bit of tweaking already to try and help with clarity on some of these. So you'll see there's a minor change in the way those are that are that focused on the fine detail, a minor way in which each of the points is, at each point now, it's very, very clear that it's either a motion or an update, or for information. And typically the updates are being used for bringing councils up to speed with ongoing work and providing an opportunity for discussion. That work may be being undertaken in a working group or by staff or in another related but important forum. And so there is scope for both that kind of informational work to be done. On the motions, I've talked with those making the motions to just try and work on making our language slightly less legalistic and slightly more plain English. And that's, for my benefit, I like to see it like that anyway, and I'm sure others do. I mean, we're dealing with people who are not necessarily native English speakers or who are hearing things remotely not necessarily on the clearest of audio. So to the extent that anything that comes to the council can be in the plainest, simplest language, that's desirable, and I hope we'll manage to achieve that in much of what we do. I'm expecting and hope that we will work within the two-hour limit. We could, if necessary, go over, but most people have booked in a two-hour slot and would expect that. And I guess this goes to the point we were making earlier, which is we really want counselors to be able to contribute, question, discuss, but ideally from a platform of being properly prepared by having followed discussions on lists and or read the relevant material, so that we use this, the, in quotes, expensive, which it is, it's expensive on all of our time and staff time and so on, to use this face-to-face meeting time as effectively as possible. So that's the essence of what I wanted to say. I mean, just really to try and wrap that up before we open up to any other discussion points, I really wanted to make sure that new counselors joining the council felt welcome and felt welcomed and started with some form of common understanding and felt that they should not be hesitant or afraid to ask questions on list privately with staff, myself, or other councillors or council leadership, and be in as strong a possible position to contribute from the outset and to feel free and able to do that, and therefore to be part of, you know, ultimately a productive and respected council. Because I think, you know, none of us want to be spending time on this significant and time-consuming effort, which then is unfairly or unduly or substantially criticized or not respected for the work it does, whether that's staff, councillors, or anyone else. So that's really what I had to say. I realize that I hope it doesn't feel like motherhood and apple pie. I realize some of it might feel like fairly basic stuff, especially to those of you who have been on the council a while or who have done significant background work, but at least it's a start, and we'll have this on the recording for others that weren't able to make the meeting. So I really encourage you, if there's any points you'd like to make now, because we do get them on the recording and they may well be useful. So whether that's your own experience coming onto the council or any other comments or points you'd make, please feel free to make them now. Or even if it's a comment on how valuable or not this little session has been.
No, this is Peter. I just say that I perfectly agree with you that even if we have different issues and thoughts on certain works, it's important that we, as much as possible, can come to agreements and show that we are efficient. It's also in order to get other people that are not in this group to trust that we work well.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. I appreciate
it. I mean, of course, there will always be some very important for our specific organizations or groups that we represent, very important issues that we can't just lay down and accept. But in an overall, to work in a sort of diplomatic way.
I agree. That's right. There's both ways of working, but also there's a part of me that wonders, and I may regret this level of honesty, but there's a part of me that sometimes wonders whether you know, strength of personalities come into it as much as strongly believed positions. So you're right. I mean, to the extent that there is a strongly held position of a group or entity that has to be respected and understood, and then it's a matter of how it's conveyed, and that's the diplomacy you referred to and the respectful way in which it's done. But to the extent that compromises can be made in order to make the process productive and move forward and not be hamstrung, that's also very attractive. So, yeah, Lunre, I see you've got your hand up. Fire away.
Yes. I just want to share my own experience when I came to the council. I think the most difficult challenge I faced was in the area of acronyms. There were so many acronyms, it was so difficult to keep track of them. And when there are meetings and these acronyms are introduced, I got easily stabilized. I realized the fact that acronym has to be used anyway. And I think that the concept of having acronym HEPA on the website was a good one. But unfortunately, the acronym HEPA that is on the GNSO website is quite limited. The acronyms listed there are quite limited. They are not comprehensive enough. Most of the acronyms that were actually used during meetings were not listed there. For example, everybody is familiar with Red Cross, but in discussing the Red Cross issue, the acronym of RCRC became prominent, and I never knew RCRC meant the same thing as Red Cross. So I wanted to check that one out, and the acronym basically says unknown acronyms. So I would recommend that I can expand the work on the acronym papers. I believe it's going to be a very useful tool for new entrants into ICANN generally and into the council. And I also want to say that the transcripts and the MP3 recording are great tools for newcomers. It gives opportunity to know what has been discussed on issues. But for me, it took me time to discover where to find them. It looks simple, but I simply didn't know how to find them until recent. I really wish I had known much earlier. Maybe it would have made life much easier for me. So I just want to point that to new entrants that they could easily keep track of what has been discussed on previous issues using the transcript and the MP3. And I think it would be very helpful if new entrants, new counselors are pointed to where those transcripts are and where the MP3 recordings are. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra. Those are both good points, actually. So the existence of many, many acronyms, and I think we can help in a couple of ways. I mean, certainly wherever we use acronyms, we should aim to avoid using them where possible, and if we do use them, to define them in the document in which they're used. And as you say, if there is an index, to aim to keep that as up to date as possible. I know I've heard on the transcripts and MP3 point that actually for some either non-native English speakers or for others who aren't as familiar with the issues, that the transcripts and the MP3s can be very, very useful in going back and recapping and understanding either the issues or simply what was discussed, because you can deal with it at your own, one can deal with it at one's own pace. So, yeah, we need to make sure. And in fact, in many ways, part of what the purpose of this call was about was setting that scene so that we either educate, as you've done, of the existence of these, or make it feel open enough that anyone can say, I didn't follow, I didn't understand, or I'm not sure how I get up to speed, to create some openings for that. Right, any other comments or issues that anyone would like to raise? Thomas.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you for putting up this call in the first place. I think this is most helpful. I have one question for you, and please bear with me should you have touched upon that earlier in the call, because I was late. I think what could be valuable, and you don't need to answer that now, is for the councillors to learn more about the options at the fingertips of the council. We are talking a lot about the PDP, and then, you know, maybe the fact that at the end of the PDP there is a consensus policy, and everybody or many people consider this process as very lengthy and cumbersome. But there are more variations to that, or more options in terms of results, rather than just coming up with consensus policies. And I think it would be helpful not only for incoming but also for maybe some of the existing councillors to learn more about the various options that the council may choose from.
Jonathan, it's Margie, if I can respond. Thomas, if you look at the PDP manual, there's a section that talks about all the various outcomes that can come out of a PDP, and you're right, it's not just consensus policies. There can be best practices, advice to the board, advice to staff. I'll try to find the section of the PDP manual that provides that. But so that's from the policy development process, the PDP. But there's also what you're also referring to is these informal processes where we provide where the GNSO Council may respond to implementation matters or something like that, and that's a whole different avenue of work that doesn't necessarily go through the formalities of the PDP process, and that that hasn't been formally documented, and staff has been trying to encourage the various SOs and ACs, the supporting organizations and advisory committees, to try to clarify the procedures that apply when it's not the formal PDP process. So it's just something to think about. We had a session that Marika ran, Marika, I think you're still on the phone, correct, from Toronto? Marika?
Sorry, Marja, what was the question?
The question, Thomas was referring to the different types of procedures that the council undertakes, and, you know, we've got the formal PDP, but we also have these informal processes that we really haven't documented in any way. That is also another way to get advice with regard to policy matters, and so I thought you might talk to them about what was going on in Toronto on the policy guidance process.
Yeah, right. So this is Marika. So as you may have seen, there's actually a document that's currently out for public comment that talks a little bit about this aspect where, you know, the board sometimes asks for input or for advice and basically asks the question, should there be any formal processes? Because if you look at the GNSO, we have the only formal process the GNSO has is the PDP. We do have a lot of, you know, ad hoc processes that we've used, like, you know, discussion groups, drafting teams, but there are no formal rules around that. So it's part of that discussion on, you know, from the end, how should the board request input from SOs and ACs. There's also the other part of the coin there that asks, like, okay, should there be any kind of formal requirements for such processes within the different SOs and ACs as they develop...
Hi, it's Jonathan rejoined.
Hey, Jonathan. As they develop policy advice that is not a PDP. So that's something that's, you know, that's open for public comment, and I think we'll see some further discussion there. But that might also be an issue for the GNSO Council at some point to discuss themselves whether, you know, you all feel whether there should be something more formal in those instances where a PDP is not necessary, because you know already at the start of the process that you're not looking for consensus policies as a potential outcome, but where you do want to have something more robust in place so you can also avoid, you know, criticism where people saying, oh, but it wasn't done through a formal process, so it doesn't really count. So I think that's something where we probably, hopefully we'll have some more discussion and hopefully possibly some directions on how to go about that.
Thanks, Marika. It's Jonathan. I've rejoined. Sorry, there seems to be a network glitch there. I got the gist of that topic, and I think it's an important and interesting topic. I'm a little reluctant to go into it in a lot of detail here because of the purpose of this call and the induction and introduction, but I do think it's an interesting topic for the council as a whole, and it is something we should pick up.
Jonathan, if I just may add, while you were absent, both Marika as well as Margie have given some information on that, and I don't know whether you heard me saying that I don't expect an answer now, but I think it's just important for incoming councillors to know that we have much more options to move forward rather than only having a PDP with a consensus policy as an outcome. And
I agree.
As far as I'm concerned, I think that we may not have made use of the whole variety of options in the past.
That's right, and I think it's a very important point, and I think it wasn't necessarily for a comprehensive answer necessarily required now, but I think it's something which we need to you know, there are elements, and you and I have discussed this sort of privately, if you like, in one-to-one conversations, that there are elements of the overall education, development, or otherwise of the council, and this might be one such topic, that's not necessarily an issue for newcomers alone, but something for the council as a whole, and I think it's a very good point. Margie, is your hand still up?
No, but actually I put in the chat, I just grabbed the language from the PDP manual, and so this is, if you're in a PDP, what the options are, starting with consensus policies, and then, you know, if you look in the chat, these are some of the options that you know, what are possible from a PDP, but that's assuming you're going through the formal process. I think what Thomas is referring to is these also informal processes that sometimes can, you know, are effective to provide, you know, response to the board or, you know, some sort of discussion about a policy matter.
Yeah, and the council's work, as I understand it, is not confined to initiating, working on, and developing through PDP, although, as I think I heard you say earlier, that the PDP, because of its rigor, and or maybe that was Marika, has real value because it can be seen to have been done properly, so to speak, whereas more informal processes may will by definition not have been done as rigorously, but nevertheless the council has other options to work with.
Yeah, and this is Rika. Just to add to that, I think it's partly, you know, it's not that these informal processes are less rigorous, but I think in the past they have at times been used for people to say, oh, well, but there were no real rules around it, so it doesn't count for us, even though there were, you know, public comments or and I think with the PDP, people feel it's, you know, because it's written down what needs to happen, they feel, and there's different, you know, checks and balances in there. People seem to feel more comfortable with that as a formal process, where on the informal processes, we sometimes just see people saying, oh, well, it doesn't really count because it wasn't a PDP. And you know, the question maybe at some point might be, should there be a formal informal process? So something that would be much more flexible than a PDP, but that does have some kind of minimum requirements that would make everyone feel comfortable that what comes out of that is, you know, a consensus position, and also for the board, that could be something that the board can act on and feeling that they have, you know, consensus of the community. So that's a bit the question there, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's a very valuable question and issue to discuss. My only hesitation is in this forum. This is a very limited group of people with a particular area. But I do think, you know, that the future development of the council and how things work effectively and efficiently is a key topic for us. So that's one to bear in mind. Good. Well, we're coming up towards the hour, so I think we should probably look to wrap it up. I'm sorry about the technical glitch a few minutes ago, but I hope this is useful, and I hope it's useful to others who listen to the audio subsequently, just as a starting point at least. And you know, we'll look forward to seeing everyone and the other colleagues on the call later this week.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. Good. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. It was a helpful session.
Good. Thank you to all who made the time and effort to be here, and we'll see you later in the week. Bye now.
Thank you.
You on Thursday. Bye. Hear you on Thursday.
Everybody.